You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Grazing dairy cows is nothing new, so you might wonder why there is so much focus on it in the dairy sector. The influence of the New Zealand-style grazing system of farming has certainly made its mark in recent years. But what makes a good grassland farmer stand out from the average, and what might the challenges be for them in the future? I'm Kate Harris, Knowledge Exchange Manager, and today I'm joined by Andre van Barneveld of Graze Consultancy to talk about his experience of working with farmers across Great Britain and how his way of supporting them has changed in light of lockdown restrictions. Welcome, Andre. For those listening who don't know you, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do as Graze Consultancy.
Okay. Yeah, I come from an unusual background, I suppose, going back to being born in Holland and moving to New Zealand. We emigrated when I was 12 years old, and my dad was a bricklayer in Holland and wanted to go farming. So we moved to New Zealand, and I became very immersed in the outdoor life and left school at the age of 15 and decided to go farming myself, working on a dairy farm. And looked, it was a great opportunity through that time. So I worked my way up through farm worker to a lower order share milking position to 50-50 share milking, where I owned a herd to buy my first farm when I was 28. And yeah, just went right through the whole thing. Ended up selling my farms a few years later and went into the consultancy over there. So I operated in the Lower North Island in New Zealand, covering probably the Wairarapa, Manawatū, Low Hawke's Bay, for people that know that part of the world.
So what is it that you do now as a consultant?
I went out on my own as Graze Consultancy 5 years ago. And as a consultant, most of my work is one-on-one consultancy with dairy farmers. I come in and basically, in a nutshell, I look at opportunity in their systems. And 9 times out of 10, the opportunity all revolves around improved grazing management and improving the amount of production that's achieved from forage in their systems, really.
I wanted to move on and talk a little bit about what you think makes a good grassland farmer.
They always see grass as first and foremost. They base everything around what can be achieved out of the grass first and foremost, and they build the rest of the system around it. Whereas, you know, somebody that's a bit down the line of how good they are at being a grassland manager, they first and foremost consider what other feeds are going to feed the cows, and then they build grass around that. And it doesn't work that way. You know, you need to put grass first.
How much about being a good grassland farmer is about building confidence in yourself and not necessarily relying on other influences from outside?
There's a massive risk out there that people get sidetracked by those outside influences that send them astray a little. And even just in the last few days, I had an instance where a guy that I felt was a really, really good grassland manager, I could see he's gone off track in the last 6 months, and he's now feeding more meal to the cows, saying, you know, like, oh, the cows are genetically capable of doing more. I'm just feeding them more and more. So, you know, feeding 4 kilos of cake where other clients are feeding 1.5, 2. But he's forgotten, what he's decided not to calculate the cost of cake and the impact it has on his residuals and substitution, you know, like they're substituting grass out of the diet to consume that cake, you know. And yeah, it's understanding those sort of parameters and the impact that has in the system.
Going back to your farming experience, so you began your farming career in New Zealand. Do you think you were a good grassland farmer when you were farming?
No, it's terrible. I farmed through the 80s into the 90s was my main farming period, and a lot changed through that time. But it was before palm kernel ever came into New Zealand. And so, you know, in the region where I was and throughout the North Island at that time, we probably, what I call, operated on a controlled starvation system. We ran higher stocking rates, and just like, we never had any dock issues because cows ate the dock. Cows are pushed pretty hard. Somebody that was doing more than 300 kilos of milk solids a cow was viewed as doing pretty well back then. So we just basically went around in rotations. If you ran out of grass, the cows just stuck to that rotation. We didn't have any supplementary feed at all to put into systems. And, you know, we, like on the farm I was on, share milking on, we wouldn't make any surplus silage. We had no bales made at all. There was no winter feed on hand. There was no palm kernel or any other type of feed came in. So basically you just went around and grazed everything all the time. When the growth was down, the cows ate less. When the growth was up, they ate more. And so it was really, really poor. And looking back, that was such a poor system where, you know, when I was milking 300 cows on 100 hectares for 6 years, I would have been so much better off to milk 240, 250 cows to do the same production. And that's a huge thing in pasture management, is knowing when to fill a deficit and when to take out a surplus, and making sure that your decisions are brave. Being cautious is usually the biggest hurdle to being a good grassland farmer. So having good information at hand, doing regular farm walks to measure grass, having that information at hand, being able to read that information and making brave decisions to identify a surplus and take it out to prevent you grazing too high covers, to know that when you've got a deficit looming that you're introducing the supplements at exactly the right time, but also that you're pulling them out exactly the right time. Again, you know, I see that more than anything, that people start feeding supplements quite quickly, but they end up feeding them for too long, and that they always say, oh, I should have stopped feeding 4 days earlier or a week earlier. It's making all those decisions really bravely, and that are kind of things that I just did very, very poorly in my grazing management back then in New Zealand. But I entered the Share Milk of the Year competition, and the judges that came out asked some very good questions, which changed my farming style, which made me realise that I needed to change the way I was farming and started making better decisions following having got, you know, I got second in the Share Milk of the Year competition there in New Zealand. And following that experience, I just became a lot better grassland farmer. But I think most of my better management advice has come from learning from when I was on the job as a consultant in New Zealand and over here, really.
Moving on, so AHDB has a number of KPIs or key performance indicators, and one of those is milk from forage. What do you think is the biggest barrier to farmers not maximising the potential milk from forage on their farms? So what characteristics do you see are typical of those achieving over 4,000 litres of milk from forage?
First and foremost is for those people to see pasture as the base of everything. Like I said, usually when I'm in front of a group, I draw a bar graph, and the first thing I put in the bottom of that bar graph is pasture. And then it's important to see pasture as the base of everything and then build everything on top of it. So people that are good at achieving good levels of milk from forage see pasture as their primary feed source. Secondly, it's also recognition that there's a massive difference in utilizing grass by grazing versus just milk from forage as far as conserved silage or zero grazing and all those things that add cost to the system. So people are very, very profitable from milk from forage are the people that try and maximise the amount of pasture utilised by grazing cows to harvest that grass. The second thing is recognising the importance of forage quality. So especially for the autumn calving or all year round, it's recognised the importance of making really high quality silage so that you can be feeding one lot of silage with 8 kilos of cake in the winter, doing exactly the same performance from the cows as feeding silage and 12 kilos of cake, you know. So recognising that if you make very high quality forage and it forms the basis of everything you do, then you can do exactly the same output from a lot less cake input. So I think they're the greatest parameters to people that maximise milk from forage, really. But it's something I've been pushing a lot, is recognising that when you are growing a surplus over your pasture demand, that the value of that extra grass is much lower than the value of the grass you're able to graze. So when you're in June and, you know, you've got enough moisture and your pasture growth rates are sitting at 80 kilos of dry matter a hectare a day, and your pasture demand might be sitting at 60 kilos of dry matter a hectare a day, you're growing 20 kilos of dry matter a hectare a day above your pasture demand, your greatest value is that first 60. The next 20 is of very low value because you're going to have to spend money on that to turn it into bales or silage of some sort. So recognising there's different values of the pasture that you've got in your system, and then really pushing to try and utilise as much of the forage by grazing cows, which means good early turnouts in the spring, trying to maximise your grazing days in the autumn, and trying to achieve as higher intakes of pasture through the grazing season as you possibly can. So, yeah, in a parameter, that's the key to maximising your milk from forage.
You touched there on making good quality silage and the importance of that. Have you got any top tips on how to make good quality silage year on year?
Again, it's just like grazed pastures, recognising the parameters that go into making good quality silage. So there's three main parameters, I guess, you look at is, first and foremost, your megajoules of energy per kilo dry matter. Secondly, it's right up there with it, is digestibility. And thirdly, it's making sure that it got reasonable protein levels so you can minimize the amount of expensive protein you have to add to the silage to make a complete diet. So at the time of feeding your silage, you're looking at the cost of your overall diet. Making higher quality silage is going to cost you more per kilo dry matter, but it means that you're going to be able to feed less cake. So your overall diet ends up being a cheaper diet. So the things that impact your digestibility are largely the time it takes to grow the silage. So it's making sure that in the spring, if you're trying to make really high quality silage, if that grass has been there since October, the last time anything was done with that paddock was October, and you're now making silage in April, it's taking a long, long time for that grass to get from when it was grazed to when it was harvested. So ideally, you're better off to try and get some class of stock to graze it first and then close it to minimize the time that it's taken to grow. And that has a massive impact on digestibility. And of course, digestibility limits how much a cow's able to consume through the period that she's consuming the silage. You know, it's how long it takes to go through the digestive system. So it has a massive impact. So trying to make sure that you have multiple cut silage, that the silage has grown very quickly over a shorter period of time. Secondly, it's the growth rate through that time will have an impact. And then the time of the year, recognizing that grass goes into a reproductive phase at the end of May and into June. So you're likely to have more stem. So again, that stem in the plant is going to mean more fiber, lower digestibility, lower energy per kilo dry matter. So it's combining the timing of your cuts with making sure that you keep your window between the times that you're cutting the silage shorter. And, you know, most people in an autumn calving system that are trying to maximize milk from forage will be making sure they're on like a 40-day multi-cut system to make really high-quality silage.
We touched a bit earlier on what a challenging grazing season it's been so far. We are seeing more extremes of weather conditions and some massive variations across the country. How can dairy farmers manage their businesses to account for these extremes?
It's a difficult one. You know, like it is becoming more extreme. And I think the biggest thing is firstly, and it's a great thing if you've been measuring for a few years yourself, measuring grass growth, you draw your supply line, you know, you draw your grass growth line on the graph, and then you plot your demand line against that and look at when your pasture demand comes and when your pasture growth comes, and working out the likely times that you're going to be in deficit and how long those periods might be, and the regularity of those shortfalls as well. You know, so if you're in an area that's regularly in summer dry, you have to build some kind of a system to make sure that you account for what you're going to do economically to fill the deficit, and even building your system around it. You know, so many people that are in a regular summer dry area, you're better off to be on 100% autumn calved system so that, you know, you've got cows going dry and dropping your demand going into the summer dry period. And that usually the rain comes at a time that coincides with you starting to calve again, and you're building good quality pasture again at the time that your pasture demand is rising. I think a lot of people need to start looking at different crops of different sorts at different times. But for me, the big thing, and you know, I'm starting to get known for being more environmentally focused. For me, the great area of opportunity is looking at our soils, looking at how we can increase our soil organic matter levels, our soil microbiology, and get that improved. For every 1% extra organic matter, it's equivalent to having like 17 millimetres of rain of moisture retention in the soil. So if we can build organic matter levels, and then also going to a more diverse sort of pasture, getting away from just your perennial ryegrass, clover swards, not sure we have the complete answers yet for a conventional system in that respect, but I think in the long run, that's the way we're going to be going. We're going to be looking at different mixture of species in our swards to give us better resilience. Like I said earlier on, the value of having growth in excess of demand is very low. So if we could have a sword that maybe didn't have as high a peak of growth, but it would retain the growth rates much better through a dry period, it would be so much more profitable. With some of these herbal swards, we may not peak as high in growth rates. We might not get to an excess of 80 kilos of dry matter a hectare a day, but perhaps that's not what we want anyway. But if we could actually have earlier growth in the spring, or we could create more growth through a summer dry period, that's where the value will be. And that's, for me, a huge area of opportunity in systems.
Andre, are there any lessons that you think we can learn from other dairy producing countries?
Sure. Like when I first started in consultancy, I felt that I was very much in my own little bubble. So I went venturing away from my own little bubble down to the South Island in New Zealand, where things are being done very differently. And then I went to South America and I had a look around systems over there. And as much as sometimes you call it a what not to do tour, you always pick up different things that influence the way you think. And that's why I say to young people, you know, for God's sake, get outside your area and go and do something different. To people here in Ireland, I recommend they go to New Zealand or they go to even the UK to some of the bigger units and see how things are done differently. You know, we need to learn. And I think when I first came over, it was really important. Like I said at the beginning, the first 2 years I've studied the differences here from New Zealand. And I find that a lot of the things in the grazing systems are just replicated over here from what is done in New Zealand. And so even the autumn management was very much that, you know, in New Zealand, people would probably drive a lot more feed into the back end and try and graze that. But generally, in most traditional dairying areas in New Zealand, you would never stop grazing because of soil conditions. The day length in the North Island stays at least an hour longer in the morning and an hour longer at night. So the impact that it has on how grass behaves and this, you know, the solar energy, which is so important for how grass grows, and then also the impact that it has on how well cows travel and graze is massive, you know. So you do have to alter the management. And over here with the autumn management, I've been known to probably recommend lower average farm covers and lower pre-grazing cover targets than what has traditionally been advised because, you know, I've really looked at systems and realised that the grass just behaves a little bit differently in October when the day length is so short over here, and that the impact of people having to house because the utilisation has dropped down to below 60% because of the soil conditions, that you do have to take that into account. So, you know, physically it's really, really important that people take into consideration and learn from other countries. You know, like there's some really, really good stuff comes from New Zealand. You know, we know that there's been a brilliant base to grass-based dairy farming in New Zealand, but we also need to learn what's happening over there negatively at the moment. I think one huge thing over there is that herd size has become quite big. There's a lot of multiple farm ownership and there's a lot of pressure with trying to get labour to run these farms. So some of my communication with people over there lately has been huge concern that their in-calf rates on cows has gone very, very poor, not because fertility has dropped on the cows, but because the management has really been different than what it used to be, you know. So people have become much more reliant on palm kernel. So palm kernel started becoming available in the 1990s, and now there's a whole generation of farmers over there that have just grown up with what was classed as a cheap feed coming into the system and just throwing it at the system to plug any shortfalls. So it's looking at how easy it is for farmers to lose their way and systems to stray from what's really, really important. And I think, yeah, learning from that is really important environmentally, looking at the pressures that are coming over there. So, yeah, look, we don't have to look at New Zealand and go, oh, you know, we need to do everything like that. But there's no harm in looking at it and learning, taking some of the positives, but also just using some of the negatives as a caution to our own systems, I think.
Andre, thank you very much for your time today. It's been fascinating listening to your thoughts, and we wish you all the very best for the future. For all things grazing, please visit the Forage for Knowledge pages on the AHDB website, where you can sign up for the Forage for Knowledge weekly newsletter, access our tools and resources, and see the latest grass growth figures from across the UK. I'm Kate Harris. Thank you for listening.
The AHDB podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss future episodes.